And of course, for peace and the strong opposition to U.S. military adventurism abroad. You don't send a message by dropping bombs on civilians, and we have always opposed the idea that the United States can throw its weight around in that way. So our vision for a just society and a better life for women, for workers, for gay people, for people of color was always called crazy. And yet you can see the transformative effect over time, that we have a cultural consensus on these issues now. In Washington, D.C., when I was there about a week ago, I was on a pundit show for women that I'm on frequently, arguing for pay equity and family leave and child care. And it occurred to me that the argument that we were having is really at the center of what's happening in Wisconsin right now and sort of the right-wing push nationally. And that basically the argument was that you shouldn't have a child if you can't afford to have a child. So for the first time in my life, actually, I was called out publicly as a mother of small children. Sort of accused of being a mother of small children, as if this were obvious evidence of corruption or membership in a special interest group. And the point was, like, how could I, with any credibility, argue that we should have family leave or equal pay or the kinds of policies that make it possible for people with children and those children themselves to live a decent life? And this argument has caught on. We saw it here in Wisconsin with the incredible attacks on public school teachers. I mean, who would have thought that our teachers would be treated as this corrupt special interest group with these special privileges that they needed to have taken from them? But that is where this argument is going, this right-wing corporate argument that, you know, only the rich deserve their money and that everybody else, the poor, who've been bashed for a long time, and we saw it in this state with the welfare reform argument that started here, but now the middle class, too, that all of us should be struggling as hard as we can for scraps, and that there should be no social contract in which we say, let's get together and provide a decent society for people. Right? I mean, it really comes down to that. It comes down to what kind of a society do we want to live in? The minimum wage has fallen 31% over the last 40 years. In my lifetime, while incomes for the top 1% have increased 110%. That's the backdrop to all of this. Half of all working women can't take a single day off to stay home with a sick child. And yet, we have this argument. Well, if you can't afford it, it was irresponsible of you to have children. Talk about a bleak vision of life. You know, that we should just scramble as hard as we can. It's really the opposite of the vision that Mike Wiggins was just talking about. That we should care for our children. That we should think about the future of our society. And that we should have a sense of compassion and working together. This is the attitude that you see at work with the privatization of our public school system. And we know now with the expansion of private school vouchers in Wisconsin that 60% of people who are applying to get those vouchers are private school parents who have never sent their child to a public school. But they're happy to take a taxpayer-financed rebate on their private school tuition. That you can see where this argument is going. We are not far from the day when we say, well, why should we spend any public money to send any child to school? And this is a private responsibility, isn't it? People have the bad sense not to be rich, then they shouldn't go around having children. Or healthcare. I had the opportunity to sit in on the joint committee talking about the rejection of Medicaid money for the state of Wisconsin and to hear the Republican arguments about why we needed to turn away millions of dollars in federal money to ensure that the working poor of Wisconsin not get health care coverage. And their arguments, they had a couple of arguments. One was, we can't be sure the money will always be there, but we can guarantee you if you don't have health care coverage now that we can withhold it in the future. So let's stay with that. That's a plan we can stand behind. And the other argument that was incredible was, and I know I see Kathleen Beinhaw, I know she's heard this many times, for the first time in history, 100% of Wisconsinites have the opportunity to have health insurance. And what they mean by that is, if you make $12,000 a year, you have the opportunity to buy a $4,000 health insurance policy. Now, they admit, if people are irresponsible and they don't purchase that policy, there's nothing that they can do about that. And given that that's a possibility, they are increasing reimbursements to hospitals for emergency room care, just in case this doesn't work out. That's the vision that they're offering to people. You know, it's really, it's a vision that was unmasked, I think, by the uprising in Wisconsin. It was unmasked by Occupy. It's clear that these are policies that don't work for the huge majority of us. It's why Mitt Romney lost the election, because a great majority of Americans see this concentration of wealth, and they see policies that enhance the even faster concentration of wealth, and they say this is total garbage. So what we have to overcome, really, I think, is the politics of resentment and despair. Because how on earth can we see these policies moving forward? And I think the reason we see them moving forward is because Scott Walker and others are making the case that while they don't have anything to offer, while they're not going to help you get health insurance, and they're not going to make it possible for you to have a good public school, what they are going to do is they're going to turn to the people in your community who do have health care benefits and who do have a pension, people like public school teachers and other public employees, and they're going to say, why should they have that when you don't? And that, unfortunately, that message has been very successful for Walker. It is going nowhere, right? I mean, we're not going to gain anything from this. And yet, because people do feel pressed, it turns out that it is a successful politics to stir up those feelings of resentment that come out of despair, really. And you'll notice that Walker is now backpedaling on this idea that he's going to create 250,000 new jobs. It's not about the jobs. It's not about the jobs. It's about sticking it to public employees. You know, that's all he's got. So I really think we have a pretty decent shot at combating that message with a message that says, as the progressive said in the progressive era, we got to do something for people. We have to pull together. We can't just say, hey, we can all be in equally bad shape. We can say we need union jobs, we need fair pay, we need great public schools, we need rural infrastructure, we need a clean environment, we need to save the headwaters. We need to be able to go to college. We need people not to be crushed by debt into their 40s, as Scott Ross points out. And we can do all that. And I think the way that we start at the level of talking about this is that we can tell people, yes. Yes, you should have health care. Yes, you should have retirement benefits. Yes, you should have a living wage and public schools and great libraries. Yes, women should have birth control and access to abortion and family leave and workable hours. You know, I think that is why the marriage equality fight caught on the way that it did, that it really caught fire, because it is such an overwhelmingly positive message, saying yes to life, yes to love and acceptance and happiness and a bigger, more generous vision of human potential and fulfillment. Right? I mean, who wants the sourpusses and their cramped, punitive, angry view of life that says you're screwed and your neighbor can be screwed too? You know, we have a really great opportunity, I think, to have a different message and a much more winning message for people. Harry Hay, the founder of the modern gay rights movement, said in the Progressive magazine, we must be the people to set each other free. And I think we're ready to do that. So, forward.
Terrific. I'd like to announce that the Ayn Rand Caucus will be meeting over here. Those of you who have had the opportunity to work with Congressman Ryan, of course, have a great appreciation because you must read Ayn Rand's works. They also have a coloring book, which goes with it. I just want to say this. I want to say thank you to those of you who stood and spoke out against the war in Syria. We do not want war, and I think that message has been taken to Washington, D.C., thanks to you, and thanks to having a messenger like Tammy Baldwin. I want to talk a little bit about scheduling, just because people get worried. We're going to start the breakout sessions this afternoon a little bit later. But not much. We're running about a half an hour behind, but I don't want to cheat you out of the afternoon session. This afternoon, in addition to the breakout sessions, and you should plan to be at least one, you're going to hear the Solidarity Sing-Along, Bernie Sanders, Jim Hightower, Malin Mitchell, John Nichols, Spoken Word, and Mike McCabe. This is a hell of a program, And we know that you're going to want to be in your seats at 1:15 to start the, or 1 o'clock to start the Solidarity Sing-Along. All right? Any questions? No? Thank you. I will say that those of you who have not yet had an opportunity to reach into your wallets to help out with the expenses, the good news is you'll get another chance. That was not your last chance. I know that some of you forgot your money at home or couldn't get your checkbook, but I'm sure you'll be able to find it between now and then. Let us just break for lunch. Try to meet with some people that you don't know so that we can help to expand this movement. I want to throw an idea out to you to see what you think of it. We're trying to figure out how to take Bob Fest on the road and to be more effective on a statewide basis. And the thought that comes to us in watching what's going on in North Carolina, that they've had Moral Monday, where every Monday morning the progressives come together to state their position on issues. Why didn't we in Wisconsin have a Moral Monday as well, following up on what North Carolina is doing? Think about it, having a representative of FightingBob.com in every county courthouse, so that on Monday mornings or Tuesday, whatever you might decide to do, Friday, we have a vote here for Friday. All right, well, please talk about this in the breakout session and come up with a recommendation, and we'll carry out that recommendation. Because I think we need more than a one-day event. We need to take the activism that you feel and the sense that you of belonging that you have and take it out to the people of the state of Wisconsin and make sure that when we double and triple our numbers, we can say to the Koch brothers, thanks very much. We don't need your help anymore. We can take care of democracy on our own. So, we all want to introduce Mark Pocan, so we're going to let him come up here by himself. Where is he? There's been a fight broken out up here. How good can it be but to have Mark Pocan representing us in the Congress of the United States? What a champion he is in every cause.
Well, hello, Fighting Bob Fest. It is great to be here with you. First of all, thank you to Ed Garvey and Matt Rothschild and Ruth Conniff, Dave Zweifel, John Nichols, and everyone who puts this together every year. Thank you from everyone in this room once again for a great Fighting Bob Fest. Are my friends from labor and the environmental community in the house? Are my friends who care about social justice and equality in the house? Are my friends who care about peace in the house? Are my friends from the Tea Party in the house? All right, I was just making sure you're actually listening. I mean, we all may have a beer today, or a juice, or a soda, tap water, coffee. But there will be no tea drinking today in the exposition hall while Fighting Bob is in the house. I am extremely proud to be our newest member of the House of Representatives from Wisconsin, and thank you to everyone who helped me get there. And as I report from our nation's capital, I can easily report what you already know. Washington is broken. But you don't need me to state the obvious. I'm not here to gripe about Washington today. There are plenty of people who do that every single day. But I want to talk about how we can change Washington, really change Washington, and how we have to change about how we talk about our vision for America. It's no longer okay just to say, hey, we're not those guys. We have to show that we're better, and we are better. And we have to make a compelling case so that we can convince Democrats, independents, Greens, and others that they want to come out and vote for us and put our ideas into place. I would like to talk about three areas that I think we can show the American people that we are serious about fighting for them and that we deserve to be in charge of the country. First, we have to fight for our democracy. We have to fight for meaningful campaign finance reform, and nothing could be higher on that list than getting rid of the Citizens United decision. Corporations are not people, and money is not free speech. And that is exactly what the constitutional amendment that Representative Rick Nolan from Minnesota and I have introduced in the House of Representatives. We're working with grassroots activists across the country who are putting this on local referendum and ballots to try to show there's grassroots support, that only people are people, and we have to get our electoral system back from the special interests that dominate and shape it every day. And we also have to fight for the right to vote for every single person. Doesn't matter where you live or who you vote for, but after the Supreme Court decision striking down Section 5, it was a blow to our democracy. As of a couple of months ago, there were over 80 bills in over 30 states trying to limit people's access to the ballot. And we can fight this state by state, but we also have to fight it at the federal level. And that's why Representative Keith Ellison from Minnesota and I have introduced our right to vote constitutional amendment. Believe it or not, but right now, there is no explicit right to vote in our Constitution. It's certainly implied. There are amendments that provide against discrimination, but there is no explicit right. And because we don't have that explicit right, we have to go into the states and someone has to prove that they've been harmed by a voting law change rather than just the opposite, where a state would have to prove they're not harming someone from having access to the ballot. That right to vote is our great equalizer. The one thing that my brother and I have in common with the Koch brothers is that we have a single right to vote for each of us. And we have to act to make sure that we have that equal right to vote for everyone, and there's not a real democracy without it. In addition to fighting for our democracy, we have to fight for a progressive economic future for every single person. What we have to do is we have to grow the middle class and help those striving to be in the middle class. And I have 7 suggestions in this area. First of all, we have to address issues around worker pay. No one should work full-time and only earn $15,000 a year at 7 1/4 an hour. You shouldn't have to work 2 jobs, 3 jobs, often without benefits, while corporate profits are soaring. In the last 45 years, 90% of America's average increase in wages increased by $59. For the top 1% of the top 1%, that average was $18.4 million. We must support low-wage workers. We must support our nation's labor unions. We must support a living wage. It's time to raise the minimum wage, and that time is now. And there is no reason why every working man and every working woman shouldn't receive the same levels of pay. It's time that a woman works at $1 for every dollar a man works for, and we must work for full pay equity. As Scott Ross so eloquently laid out this morning, no one should be deterred from a higher education simply because they cannot afford it. We must address rising higher education costs. We must address the interest rates that students pay in order to get loans. But we also have to address the previously unaddressed 40 million Americans who have out-of-control student debt, who have current student loans, and need to be able to refinance those loans at the lowest possible rates so we can put the money back into the economy and help us grow. And that's the bill that I've introduced that we're going to start putting out next week in Washington. Third, we have to invest in our country, and the most sure way of doing that is to invest in our roads, our bridges, our schools, and our crumbling infrastructure. Let's rebuild America and put people back to work right now. fourth, let's help implement the Affordable Care Act. Let's improve it where it needs to be improved. But let's also go one step farther where the Progressive Caucus in Congress has recommended, and let's add a public option so that no one doesn't have access to health insurance in this country. Fifth, we've passed bad trade deal after bad trade deal in this country, and now we have the mother of all trade deals, NAFTA on steroids, the Trans-Pacific Partnership before us. Now, I'm already fighting this deal. I've led our freshman class to the letter that 36 of us have signed in our freshman class, talking directly about trying to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But we need to stop fighting for these so-called free trade deals and start fighting for fair trade deals, from food safety to the environment to labor laws to our economy. There are plenty of reasons to stop the TPP, and I hope you'll join me in fighting that every minute along the way. Sixth, the only discussion that we should have on the table regarding Social Security and Medicare is how do you strengthen those programs. I grew up in a lower middle class family. My mother is 84 years old. She has run through most of her savings, and she gets $1,101 every single month in Social Security. To try to balance the budget on the backs of people like my mother and the millions of seniors like her across the country is simply wrong. We have to stand up. No Democrat should support any cuts to Social Security or Medicare. Absolutely no one. And finally, in my economic agenda, let's address our nation's tax system. Let me tell you that corporations in Washington, D.C. have some of the best lobbyists in the nation. There are tax breaks for big gas and big oil. There are tax breaks for corporate jets. There are tax breaks so you can send jobs overseas. And for that matter, way too many corporations don't even pay taxes because they hide their profits overseas. Right now, there is a five-story building in the Cayman Islands that is the home to 18,000 corporations. Hiding their profits and not paying their fair share. Enough is enough. We need to get rid of those special interest tax breaks, and let's tax investments like regular income. It's time to change and make sure we get a fair deal for every single person. And while we're fighting for our democracy and for a progressive economic future, there's finally one more thing I think we need to stand for, and that's to stand for peace. We are war weary. We are tired of Iraq and Afghanistan. We are tired of a perpetual state of war. I am proud that President Barack Obama has done so much in so many areas. He's done so very much to bring racial equality to this country. As a gay American, there's no president who has done more to stand for non-discrimination for every gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender person. The Affordable Care Act is a huge step forward in a country that's avoided a real discussion about health care for way too long. And he has saved us from the brink of bankruptcy after the Bush presidency. But when it comes to the question of our national security interests in Syria, Mr. President, I am sorry, but I am not there. We are tired of war after war. The playbook has to have more than one page when that page only says military action. And we are not the only country that can police the world. The use of chemical weapons is reprehensible. The international community, preferably through the United Nations, must discuss and address this, but that does not equate to the only option being a U.S.-dominated military strike. We've ended the chapters on Iraq and Afghanistan. Let's not open a new one in Syria. So I want people in this room to know, I'm hearing from you, my friends, loud and clear. I agree, and I will not support a military strike in Syria. Thank you. That is my plan. Let's be leaders on restoring democracy. Let's promote a progressive economy with opportunity for everyone. And let's begin a period where war is only discussed in our history books and not on our daily news. For those reasons, people will support us, give us the chance to take back our country, and we can actually have a fair, more fair democracy for every single person. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Are you ready to fight for our democracy?
Yeah.
Will you help create an economy for every single person?
Yeah.
Will you loudly and proudly stand up to another military response or another war?
Yeah.
I knew this wasn't the Tea Party, Ed. I knew. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Thank you so much. Have a great Fighting Bob Fest. Thank you.
I kind of like him. Matt Rothschild is here for another introduction. Matt?
Love that, Mark Pocan. I just want to say 30 seconds about the war in Syria. You know, we hear a lot about the chemical weapons. The results from the UN aren't in yet. And who are we anyway? Let's remember, in Vietnam, we dropped 20 million gallons of napalm on that country and killed tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, and Lord knows how many birth defects were created as a result. We dropped depleted uranium shells in Iraq. Our biggest ally in Israel used white phosphorus in Gaza. Under Barack Obama's logic, it would have been justified for even Syria to attack the United States for using chemical weapons. So even that argument falls flat. And for the president to say that there's paralysis in the UN Security Council, therefore he can go do what he wants, is a war crime. It's against international law. We signed the UN Charter. The UN Charter says we can't do that. No country can do that. And if he were to be so brazen as to go to Congress and not get authorization and then go ahead and bomb anyway, we would know just how lawless this president has become. So let's lighten things up a little bit. 19 years ago when I took over at the Progressive, Ruth and I put our heads together to decide how we might want to spice up the old magazine a little bit, get a little more, inject a little more humor into it. Ruth had just seen a guy from Milwaukee named Will Durst perform at the Wisconsin ACLU annual dinner, and she told me we had to get him in the magazine pronto. So we did, and he's been bringing, where is he? There he is. He's been bringing his zany humor and his whacked out analogies to the Progressive ever since. If you don't know him, you're in for a real treat. He's been on David Letterman. He's been nominated for 5 Emmys. He's 7 times been up for Comic of the Year. And once you've heard him, you'll want to hear him again, and you'll get a chance to again tomorrow when he'll be at the High Noon Saloon tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. So bring your friends then and enjoy him right now. Will Durst.
Ruth Cardiff, Matthew Rothschild, Ed Garvey, how about a hand?
It's great to be here, looking out at you guys, because you are my target demographic. You are people who read or know someone who does. And I don't live in Wisconsin anymore. I live in San Francisco, and you gotta understand, San Francisco is not the real world. San Francisco, Halloween is redundant, okay? But it reminds me of Madison, because in San Francisco, we don't care who you are. We don't care. We don't judge you based on your color, your creed. You could be a red-bearded Lithuanian vegan dwarf in the golden showers. Come on down. The water's fine. We get a street festival for that. And Madison is the same way. You guys are beyond blue. You're not blue. You're post-blue. You're indigo. You're eggplant, aubergine, periwinkle. And, yes, you know the difference. So it's good to be here. I'm a political comic, which, of course, means that sometimes there's nothing going on and I'm screwed. But not now. And I have so many people to thank. The hard part, being a political comic, not coming up with the new stuff. I mean, there's always something. You know, the NSA spying on every American. And what could be more democratic than that? Turns out the only way to keep the NSA from following your every move is by becoming one of its employees. And don't you love it that Snowden went to China and Russia to avoid government persecution? Isn't that like joining the army because you're tired of people telling you what to do? So there's always new stuff. The hard part is getting rid of the old stuff. You know, I mean, George W. Bush for 8 wonderful years was like a father to me. I know. He sucked for the country and the hemisphere and the planet and the solar system and the universe. But for me, he was pure gold. For 8 wonderful years, he was like a father to me. I always carry around these 3x5 cards. At the end of the Bush administration, I had 2 complete cards full of verbatim quotes from George Bush. I didn't alter a syllable. One was, I think we could all agree the past is over. But my favorite was, the problem with the French is they don't have a word for entrepreneur. You can't make stuff up like this. And Obama, I gotta tell you, Obama is tough, man. Well, for one thing, there's no scandal. I mean, Clinton was a corpulent womanizer, you know. I never had sexual relations with that woman. He was pointing at Helen Thomas. He meant that one. And Bush had the DUIs and the DTs and the STDs and the ADHD and... And Obama is so smooth. He's got less friction than rayon pajamas on silk sheets in zero gravity. It makes Clinton look like a chunk of concrete wrapped in Velcro, dipped in wallpaper paste. No matter what you think of Obama's policies, you got to admire his ability not to get involved in them. But the Republicans hate him so much, the enmity, they hate him. They really do. I mean, nothing he does, he can't even pass a bill to close the loophole in gun registration. I mean, it's just loopholes. But the NRA is so, NRA assault weapons can be used as legitimate hunting rifles. Okay. I can follow your line of reasoning. You can also use a chainsaw to cut butter. If you think about it, a hand grenade will signal the end of recess. And then Obama announces that he wants to put together a program to map the brain. A brain mapping project. And UW's going to get some of the money from that, of course, because... But immediately... The Republicans form an anti-brain squad. You may know them as the Republican Congress. Run by John Boehner. 11 brothers and sisters. John Boehner has 11 brothers and sisters. They're all boners. This is true. He's the only Boehner in the family. His mother's a boner. His father's a boner. Well, 12 kids. You do the math. And, of course, I miss Mitt Romney. A man with all the personality of a plastic picnic fork with three of the tines snapped off. You know what? I think he was electile dysfunctional. I really do. He was the worst candidate. He goes to Britain, Great Britain, and pisses off the entire country. Great Britain! That's not one of the tough ones. And there goes Paul Ryan. Yeah, an Ayn Rand fan. I love that, Ayn Rand. When I was a kid, she was Ayn Rand. How do you get to change the pronunciation of your name after you die? That is cool. And, of course, he's the guy, you know, he replaces Medicare with vouchers, coupons, healthcare coupons. Why? Because old people love coupons. I got a coupon! Only four more, we can book an anesthesiologist. And, of course, they're so anti-gay marriage, which I don't understand. I don't see, and it's lovely that it's changing all over America. It's changing over the world, gay marriage. Brazil voted for it. France voted for it after a couple of protests, which really was counterintuitive to me. The French protesting against, I mean, it's France, you know, a French lover, you know, pardon my French. You never hear anybody say, pardon my Cantonese, you know. France protesting against gay, against love. That's like Germany telling everybody to lighten up. The Irish demanding shorter drinking hours. America seeking consensus. Italy marching in unison. Okay. I went too far. But I don't understand how two people's happiness makes me miserable. Well, I don't think someone should marry someone of the same sex. Well, then don't. Problem solved. Let's move on. Let us stuff on the list. No, no. Wait. You don't understand. My religion doesn't believe that any... Yeah, but they don't belong to your religion. They belong to another religion, entirely altogether different. One that involves honey and mustard and lemon, and you wouldn't like it. Besides, no one wants the tables turned. You don't want another religion telling you that your wife has to walk five paces behind you dressed as a grieving beekeeper, now do you? Imagine losing your wife in a Saudi Arabian mall. But we've seen what's happening. It's happening everywhere. It's going to come down to states. I mean, eventually gay marriage is going to be commonplace. Until finally, mandatory. I got dibs on Clooney. So that's why we got to support the Democrats. I know the Democrats drive you nuts. I doubt if 3 out of 10 of them could escape from a stalled escalator. Escalators, moving staircase. Why do you think Democrats were so intent on passing the stem cell bill? They're depending on that research to generate a spine. Wow. Wrong crowd. Sorry. But the Republicans, my God, they've de-evolved into a single-cell amoeba. They're the tax cut zombies from the planet. No. Their entire negotiating stance with Obama for 4.5 years. No. No, sir. No way. Not a million years. Let me think. No. I'll sleep on it. No. What are you, 4? And all the tax cuts go to the wealthy. Does that make any sense at all? You're giving money to the rich. The rich have money. That's why they're rich. Give some money to the poor. Give the rich a hug. Who wants a government hug? And then they always trot out some pointy-headed economist from the Heritage Foundation. Well, obviously, you're an ignorant individual, unable to comprehend the complexities of supply-side economics. The deal is we give the money to the rich, and then they spend it, and it trickles down to the poor. No! They're not going to spend it. They're going to hang on to it. That's how they got rich. You give us poor money, I guarantee we will blow every damn penny
we get our grubby little hands on. Why do you think we're poor? Blowing it on silly, superfluous stuff like food and rent and health insurance. Every day is a party. Besides, I'm tired of being trickled on. Becoming a mite suspicious of the alkaline nature of this trickle-down phenomena. And we're cutting programs left and right. We cut heating oil subsidies to the elderly. Heating oil subsidies to the elderly so that rich people can have more money? What are we, the Gorgar people now? Let's just cut to the chase. You hit 65, we put you on an ice floe with matches and a pointy stick. If you're a Republican, we take away the stick, because that's an entitlement. Perhaps I've overreacted. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank you guys for attending. And I know it's late. I know you're hungry. I want to thank you guys for sitting up here and laughing politely. Because there's nothing harder than sitting next to the comic. And what do you say? I want to thank you guys for not breaking into my act with a little song. And it could have been a shorter song, for Christ's sake. I want to thank you guys. And no, tomorrow I'm going to be at High Noon Saloon after the Packer game, 8 o'clock or something. But know that you are not bound by that little drum that they're passing around to put money into. You can send money. You can put a check in an envelope. We still have that technology, thank God. You guys have been great. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. Will, thank you very much. We're now running a little bit late, so here's what I'm proposing to you. We were to start after lunch at 1 o'clock, but that's when Bernie Sanders is going to be speaking in the Hightower and so on. So let's start at 1:35, and then we will have some time to eat, go to your breakout sessions, and then we'll do the Solidarity Sing-Along and sing-along with Bernie Sanders. Will be well worth it. So. And as Will points out, you can still put money in an envelope if that makes you feel better. But we say just put it in the pot. Nobody's going to take it from you. Thank you. We'll see you right after lunch.
Going on a one-hour break, and we'll be back at 35 minutes past the hour, 1 hour from now, 1:35 Central Time.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't clear. He said multiple things.
Oh, okay. That's no problem. Yep. We're going to start with Bail for Justice, and then we're not going away. I don't know if we'll have time for all four, but if we do, then we'll do banks and solidarity forever. We have a shuffle or whatever, outdoor.
I got a 50-foot extension cord, and...
For sure. If you have time, if you can.
This is cool. Yeah.
So the whole thing's going to be packed, right? Up at the upper level. Screaming.
Just like at all those Metallica concerts.
I just want to, they probably don't let you do that anymore. I want to see a sea of, like, cigarette lights. How you doing, brother? Good. I was telling Bernie last time I was in here was for roller
coaster.
Which, as far as I know, is I think the only permanent tenant of this building.
Wow. Roller coaster.
Yeah.
I remember watching it.
It's certainly the only athletic event.
They're running late, maybe a half hour late. They just ended as I came in. So.
Okay.
But it wasn't.
I'm just gonna
do we know what we're playing? Or just waiting?
Yeah.
No, there's a list. There's four songs.
I can figure it out.
We can still play ahead of time. We can play our own songs.
Except actually there's a breakout session going on there, so we
I'll just play through my repertoire quietly. How's that?
I'll tune quietly.
And we're not going away as in what?
G. And I'd say Banks is the only one. I think they're all G except I think we do Banks and C. Would you agree?
Yes.
And I mean, Jail for Justice, we haven't played a lot with these movies.
I do want to sit down with you, Jim, sometime and mark up the song. Hey, Jim. Sometime I do want to go through with you and mark up a song.
Sure, yeah, I'd be happy to.
I'm expecting
so I'm just gonna start like that's enough to give
no I understand. I was more so talking about the
with this group under these circumstances, everybody's a percussionist.
We're all standards, we're all drums too, right?
Thank you for your great Facebook work as always.
Oh.
You give me a wonderful chance to comment.
Yeah, God, there was a lot this week.
Oh, yeah.
Talk those things. Yeah. Thank you. Whenever there's a bank we're outside.
Sure.
No,
it's not easy to do.
Well, it's not like I
don't
know what I could do. Anybody could do it. You could look back at Lisa's albums.
I'm getting lost. All the albums. That's a great point, too, because I...
If we run out of time, I think the most likely one will come.
But what is it like?
I'm not too good on my back.
Access to birth control. This governor, by the way, does not support.
We're going to do everything we can to
make some progress. We support access to birth control.
Yes, I'm
going to
use
it. We will never get
to
the
vaccination.
He would always say, I support health, I'm not saying right. Never would have been.
I have a
supportive
of
birth control. So, simply that means sometimes we will have. So when they were trying to do the repeal on having to step back statute, I asked them to
Right now they're preaching
tongues. Sometimes we think it's like, they'll go away. Guess what? It doesn't work. So we told our own story. It might have been 5 hours when we took that on the assembly floor, because what we said was that we are not going to try to do something. And I believe all of you, it's hard to talk about that. I understand because of a personal private decision. Why do we have to share our business? Well, we have to do it because there is a way to be right. And there is a moment.
He can have that set up.
Okay.
like a whole lot of fun. There's a low grade torpor, but it's a lot better than no work to get on. So what we know so far, doing the research on what that little wood looked like during the passage, we know that it would not cause the complaint. It's a very, very low percentage effect. Make sure that you've got some money from the account. And then the other thing is that we're looking at just modestly doing it. So just a thing that I was talking about, but it could also be a 6%. So one of the things to talk about when you standardize the WAC family medical leave insurance, it looks like the more would probably use that than it's meant. Women at this point are, well, in Wisconsin, 50% of women are the sole or the primary breadwinner in their family. So if you're talking about how much money that would bring back into the family, pay a medical family insurance, it certainly helps that. The other thing too is that, you know, it's pretty dangerous, but still women tend to be so planning care. And then again, with equal pay, you're already talking about women earn less money. So when you're kind of off and it's not paying, there's really very family coming in as well. What else do you think I'm supposed to say in here? I'm
want to do solitary cover, nor would you. Like, I don't care either way. I just felt that we have all the instruments. So, it's kind of, those who don't talk before or play instruments, they don't realize when you make changes, the kind of music where you go on, it's never a good idea. So it's easy for folks, you know, like, well, a few of us want to do it stuff, but it's very difficult to convey that message to, you know. I wish we could talk about it. I really don't. Right. But 10 minutes before we start, not a good time to change things.
Thank you. Can we move the podium back?
Do we really need to? It's a royal pain to move.
Oh, is it really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe not.
They fill it up with water and it all falls out when I try to move it.
Oh, I see.
It.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you.
getting ready to begin the next half of today's 12th annual Fighting Bob Fest. The Solidarity Sing-Along folks are mounting the stage, and we are coming to you live from Fighting Bob Fest here in the Alliant Energy Center, Dane County Coliseum in Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, hi everybody. We're here from the Solidarity Sing-Along. Thanks so much for having us. We're going to sing Have You Been to Jail for Justice? There's a bunch of song sheets that are circulated throughout the crowd, so please feel free to sing along. Have you been to jail for justice?
We must be after prison for judging to prevail.
We're not going away.
Bye-bye.
Solidarity forever, everybody. Thanks so much for having us. Solidarity forever.
Scared of him. Let's hear it for the Solidarity Singers.
We're still here.
We're still here.
We're still here.
Hey, John.
Okay.
Am I introducing you next?
No, just let me introduce. I'll just come up and do it. Or you can, you, I, whatever. Let me do it.
What do you need to
say? Sit down.
Okay.
Let me introduce her.
All right. Have a seat, bud.
You do it.
Okay, you're on in a sec, lady. Don't go far.
Brothers and sisters.
Hi, Mary.
People still coming back in. I like that very much. I'm going to speak to folks in a little bit, but I wanted to step up here right now and say two things. What a fabulous reality that there's a place where the Solidarity Sing-Along can perform without arrests. Because in this room today, the Constitution of the United States and the state of Wisconsin applies. But I wanted to come up for just a moment and introduce the person who's going to introduce Bernie Sanders. Because if you know anything about Bob Fest, you know there is a ladder to get to the higher ground. But I just want to say this to you. When I look at the Wisconsin State Legislature, and I look at who has the courage to stand up on the fundamental economic and social justice issues that Bernie Sanders stands up on at the federal level, I look to one member to be absolutely consistent in the state senate. I know there are many state senators we respect and regard, but I want to emphasize to you, there is one member of our state senate who has called Scott Walker out on every difficult economic issue. And when I went down to Illinois and met the Wisconsin 14, there were some of them saying, oh, I don't know when we're going to get back to Wisconsin. Oh, we've been to this hotel. I don't really like this hotel that much. The waffles aren't that good in the morning. But there was one member of the Wisconsin 14. A couple are pretty good, but there was one who said, I don't care how long we stay here. If we're stopping Scott Walker, I'm in front of that parade, not following it. That was State Senator Kathleen Barnhart.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, John. And thank you, everyone here. And thank you, the Solidarity Singers. The folks who come to the Solidarity Singer Sing-Along, which they will tell you all of us are now part of the Solidarity Sing-Along. So consider yourselves part of the in-group. You're all part of it. And they're going to hang out there for just a minute, because I'm going to say a few words before I bring Bernie up here. So you got to listen to me first. The Dreamers are protesting in Arizona. And if you were here early this morning, you heard what Bethany Ortiz said about the Dreamers. They sat down in front of a bus leaving a deportation facility, and after several hours, the bus backed up. The Dreamers are those people, the young people born in Mexico, raised in America, and they're protesting the refusal of the House Republicans to take up the immigration reform bill. Recently, we all celebrated the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and we heard a fabulous speech this morning about how that was just one point in a very, very big, very hard movement. Well, the Dreamers in Arizona are keeping Martin Luther King's dream alive. And keeping the dream alive in the state capital, in Madison, Wisconsin, are the folks who come to the noon solidarity sing-along. Recently, the firefighters showed up, and one of the firefighters was carrying a huge sign directed at the governor. It said, "You're running for president on a platform of freedom and small government? That's hilarious." For those folks that are from my part of the state and are just beginning to learn about the sing-along, I've asked the folks who were at the sing-along today to hold their vowels and consonants up over here, because I want you to know about this story. This word is the name of the book that Governor Walker is writing with his ghostwriter. Now, not long ago, in the state capitol, some of our very good friends here, some of those holding the vowels and the consonants, were arrested. But the remaining vowels and consonants stood strong and very quickly regrouped and formed a new word. And let this be a lesson to all of us. Let this be a lesson to all of us. Thank you very much. Everyone who came is now officially a member of the sing-along. Now, this month, on a serious note, this month we are also marking another anniversary. One you might not hear very much about, so I want to share with you what happened 100 years ago this month. Miners were virtual slaves to the company. 14-hour days, wages at the bare minimum. Miners paid in scrip, not cash, so they had to buy everything they needed at the company store, where, of course, prices were inflated. The company owned the shacks, they owned the churches, they owned the roads, they owned the schools, they owned the land where the miners lived. And when the miners went on strike, they lost their home, they lost their possessions. And tent cities sprung up outside the mine. Standing barely 5 foot tall, a woman of Irish descent, like myself, one of my heroes, a woman who was called the Angel of the Miners. And she was known as Mother Jones. The magazine was named after her in 1970. She traveled the country to organize for better working conditions. She organized the men, she organized the women, she organized the children, and at one time in one strike, she even organized the mules in the mine. And when the miners struck in Ludlow, Colorado, 100 years ago, she was there to encourage them as they made it through the Colorado winter in tents. Now, immediately when that strike happened in September, 100 years ago, the Rockefeller headquarters in New York, who owned the company, who owned the mine, they hired thugs and gunmen from the Feltz-Baldwin Detective Agency in Texas. My apologies to Jim Hightower, who's coming after me. But doesn't this sound vaguely familiar? The miners and the wives and the children were evicted from the shacks. They sent up tents just as the winter was setting in. And on the 20th of April in 1914, on a Sunday, after they survived the Colorado winter in tents, the thugs and the gunmen opened machine gun fire. Not on the men who were playing a Sunday afternoon game of ball, but on the tents where the women and children were inside, probably preparing food. Then the gunmen charged the tents, lit and spread oil all over the tents, and lit the flimsy structures. 55 women and children died. Some say 199 lost their lives. This is a 100-year anniversary this month. Mother Jones was not at Ludlow at the machine gun massacre in that tent city, but she spread the story all over the United States. She spoke to groups over and over again saying, support mine safety, support workers' rights. She told about the strike. She told about Scripps. She told about the mine safety laws in Colorado that weren't even being followed. And she told about how important an eight-hour day was. For all of you with gray hair in the audience, Mother Jones was 83 when that massacre happened. So never think you're too old to tell the story of injustice. Now, eventually, Woodrow Wilson and the Congress came and proposed that the mine and the owners get together, and there was a commission, and child labor laws were formed, and the eight-hour day was passed for railroad workers in 1916, and most workers were protected by the eight-hour day laws in 1937. But Mother Jones knew if the workers were going to win, they had to be willing to break unjust rules, and she had to tell their story. Now, 50 years ago, the folks at the March on Washington told a story about injustice as they broke the rules, conventional rules of society, when they marched for freedom and they marched for jobs. And 20 years before that march, four young black men in Howard University sat down at a lunch counter in Washington, D.C., and silently broke the rules. And breaking the rules was what Vaclav Havel did. Havel was a playwright. His work was banned in his home country of Czechoslovakia. And in his 1978 essay called The Power of the Powerless, Havel challenged the Czech people. He wrote that living under the communist system, the people were not only victims, but they were instruments. In his words, by accepting the given rules of the game, he himself has become a player in the game, thus making it possible for the game to go on, for it to exist in the first place. Havel talked about things nobody was talking about, and people listened, and they started talking, and in a decade after the publication of his book, enough people had decided to not keep playing by the rules that the Soviet communist system collapsed, and Havel became president of the newly born Czech Republic. The labor movement, the civil rights movement, the overthrow of the Soviet system, the sing-along in Madison, the protest movement with the Dreamers, they all follow a similar path. Enough people stopped playing by unjust rules. Now, the civil rights movement didn't change America by following the rules. They rewrote the rules. When there was a drinking fountain that said whites only, they said, that doesn't mean I'm going to follow your rule. Now, we stand at the edge of the rule of corporate America. The fears of Bell and Bob La Follette about to be realized. He warned people, too much power in the hands of too few. And Citizens United has created a political system of corporate money threatening to control American democracy. The rule of money becomes the accepted way of doing politics, and corporations control politics through their money, even though Americans, by overwhelming majorities, say their will is that corporations are not people, and that money does not equal free speech. Even 72% of those who agree with the Tea Party's view on issues. People have become spectators, and politics has become a horse race. And to move ahead in the horse race, the candidate has got to have money. And if she has more money than the opponent, then she's the more viable candidate. A few of us bet on who's going to win. But frankly, the groups that are really involved are the groups behind the veil, paying for all those nasty ads. And we wonder what happens when these folks get elected. I'm going to quote the Capital Times and my good friend, Senator Dale Schultz, who told the Capital Times, When some think tank comes up with the legislation and tells you not to fool with it, why are you even a legislator anymore? You just sit there and take votes, and you're kind of a feudal serf for folks with lots of money. Now, the unspoken attitude in the rules that govern our elections is that people can be manipulated. If you have enough money, do enough poll testing, you can manipulate and have all those nasty ads. You can manipulate people to vote against their best interests. And you can divert attention from the things that really matter, like creating the kind of communities we want to live in. You can divert attention from issues that really matter, like health care, women's rights, great schools for our communities, jobs with families, sustaining wages. Now, the governor's been bragging about jobs, but the truth is most of them are low-wage, part-time jobs. And the pie of all the goods and services in our state show a shrinking, record-setting shrinking portion that goes to wages and salary, and a record-setting big increasing portion that goes to corporate profits after taxes. Now, to fix this imbalance, the Center for Wisconsin Strategy reported we should be raising the minimum wage, indexing the minimum wage, strengthening its enforcement, building skills and education, and reforming regressive taxes. But what did this governor do? He made the system of taxation more regressive. Ruth told us a lot about the problems and mistakes he made on Medicaid. He spent more, $4 billion more, but underfunded the basic parts of state government. He turned a small surplus into a deficit going into the next budget. And last budget, he didn't pay more than $500 million in debt payments coming due. And in this budget, we must pay more in debt payments as a percent of our taxes than ever before in our history. Ladies and gentlemen, the truth is, at every step in the last 3 years, the governor and the Republican majority has chosen the rich over the poor, the powerful over the weak, profits over the environment, corporations over consumers, centralized power over local control, and capital over labor. These efforts are part of a long-range action plan to put the Republicans in power to achieve corporate goals and to alienate ordinary citizens, and believe me, it's working. In 2003, Grover Norquist, quoted in the Denver Post, said, "We are trying to change the tone in state capitals and turn them toward bitter nastiness and partisanship." Well, I think they've succeeded. In post-recall Wisconsin, folks feel disillusioned, frustrated, hopeless, and you can easily see how politics can slip back into the spectator sport horse race it was in 2010. Remember what I said. The rules that govern our elections that intentionally manipulate people must be broken. People are voting against their own interest because they're being diverted from their attention is being diverted from things that really matter to people. Like a woman in Sparta who was down at the protests in February of 2011, who had graduated recently with a degree in special education, who went home back to Sparta to learn the truth about those Democrats and voted for Scott Walker in the recall election because she didn't want the Democrats to take away her daddy's guns. This is a true story, ladies and gentlemen. This is my world. You can call it propaganda, you can call it good marketing, but the truth is the poor and the middle class folks all over Wisconsin are voting for and supporting candidates, voting for corporations over consumers and the rich over their neighborhoods. And lost, ladies and gentlemen, lost in this equation, the equation of money equals free speech, is the will of the people. Lost is human contact. Lost is any discussion about what's important for our community, its quality, the steps we have to take to achieve the goals for our home. And lost in this equation, ladies and gentlemen, is we the people, the very foundation of democracy. It's in times like this that I turn to Saul Alinsky. Those of you with gray hair remember the days of rage at the 1968 National Democratic Convention in Chicago. Alinsky said to the protesters, learn a lesson, go home, organize, build power, and the next convention, you be the delegate. And in Wisconsin, I see this all over the state. People want to take back their community in the plethora of new faces running for county board and city council. And I see it in Trempealeau County. Trempealeau County is the epicenter of sand mines in the North American continent, all up and down the Mississippi River, where I'm from. Folks have organized, and they're getting ready to fight, and they are fighting every day the explosion of sand mines. And recently, the Trempealeau County Board passed unanimously a one-year moratorium against sand mines in the epicenter of sand mine country, Trempealeau County. Now, it took hundreds of activists, thousands of emails, a Facebook page, a film festival, a movie made called The Price of Sand, people working in their communities, working in their county. And I tell you this story because the first thing they learned is that in order to get things happening, they have to first show up. That's the first rule. All this takes time. All this takes persistence. Breaking the rules of politics is not going to be easy. It's hard work to change people's minds, but we hold the power in our hands. We hold the power to help people connect the dots between what happens in Madison, who they voted for, and what happens in their community. So let's have that debate based on ideas and issues about what kind of communities we want to create. But you know what? The other side isn't going to join us, because their strategy works too well for them. It suppresses our voters. So how to beat them? Well, we certainly can't win by following their rules. We have to write our own. On the ceiling in the governor's conference room in the Capitol, in the artwork, are written the words, "The will of the people is the law of the land." Under the seat of power, we need to take those words down and lay them on the table and turn them into the action of every single person who sits at that seat of power and make Fighting Bob proud. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's now my great honor to introduce Senator Sanders. Senator Sanders was elected in 2006 to the U.S. Senate. He's the longest serving independent member of Congress. He graduated from the University of Chicago and moved to Vermont, where he was the mayor. And when he became the mayor, he won by 10 votes. So don't let anyone tell you your vote doesn't count. Senator Sanders is the voice of the shrinking middle class, the working class, and he is holding that seat in Senate that was held by Senator Robert La Follette. Please welcome Senator Sanders.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. And let me thank you for inviting me to come to Wisconsin. As I drive around Wisconsin, as we saw your landscape flying in, there is no other state in this country that I think is closer to my state of Vermont. We feel very warmly about Wisconsin. I think we are sister states. And thank you very much for allowing me to say a few words. I am here today because I believe in the history of Wisconsin. I share with you your pride in the progressive tradition of this state, which has led the country in so many ways. And I know, because of the extraordinary grassroots efforts that you have and will undertake, that once again, Wisconsin will lead the nation in progressive activism. These are somber times for the United States. All of you are more than aware of the discussions that are taking place in Washington about a war with Syria. And let me just say this about war. And let me just say this about aggressive action. I believe in war and aggressive action, and the time is long overdue that we declared war against high unemployment in this country and that we created the millions of jobs that this nation needs. Now, wouldn't it be a great thing if all of the media and all of the political leaders of this country were focused on how we create millions of jobs, how we rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, how we deal with the reality that real unemployment in this country is not 7.4%, but almost 14%, that youth unemployment, our entire generation of young people, high school grads, college grads, unemployment for them is close to 18%, black unemployment for kids, young black kids, close to 40%, Let us declare war against unemployment, create millions of jobs in this country. And if we're going to go to war, let's declare war and defeat the trend toward a collapsing middle class. And let's declare war against young people in Wisconsin and Vermont and all over this country who are working for $7, $8, $9 an hour. Let's raise the minimum wage to a living wage. How's that for a good war? You want another war that will rally the American people? How about ending the national disgrace that the United States remains the only country in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right? How about a war for a single-payer national health care system? Now, you really want a war if you're really hungry for war, you really want to be aggressive. How about a war that ends the trend in this country toward an oligarchic form of society where a handful of billionaires control the economy and the political life of this country? Now, how about a war to fulfill the dreams of the American people and creating an egalitarian form of society rather than one in which the top 1% owns 38% of the wealth in America while the bottom 60% owns 2.3%. You want a war? Let's declare war against oligarchy. Now, if you really, really got your finger on the trigger and you really want to be brave and courageous and go to war, what about a war against Wall Street and their greed? Today, the top six financial institutions in this country have assets of over $9 trillion, which is equivalent to 2/3 of the GDP of the United States of America. They write 2/3 of the credit cards and issue half of the mortgages in America. And after their greed, their recklessness, and their illegal behavior drove this country into the worst economic downfall since the Great Depression, you'll all be delighted to know that after you bail them out, they're now enjoying record-breaking profits. Now, how about breaking up the major financial institutions in this country? Now, that will be tough. Some people talk about Congress regulating Wall Street. Let me tell you, I am a United States Senator. That ain't the way it works. Wall Street regulates the Congress. Now, how about another war to save the planet and address the planetary crisis of global warming? How about standing up to the oil companies and the coal companies and telling them that we have got to transform our energy system, and when we do that, and when we move to energy efficiency, new forms of transportation, wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, not only can we cut greenhouse gas emissions, lead the world in combating global warming, we can create millions of jobs doing that. How about that war? And here's another war that I think we should fight. People fought and died in this country for democracy. And in my state of Vermont, at our town meetings, which we hold in March, what democracy means is one person, one vote. That's what it means. It does not mean a handful of billionaires controlling the political process in this country. So how about a war to overturn this disastrous Supreme Court decision on Citizens United and move to public funding of elections? How's that for a war? Let me say a brief word on Syria. And I know that all of you agree with me that in Syria now we have a thug running that country who has made billions on the backs of his people and recently has waged chemical warfare against his own people. But let me tell you something about foreign policy and wars. I am old enough to remember Vietnam. And I remember like it was yesterday, Henry Kissinger standing in front of charts and maps telling us that if Vietnam fell, there would be a domino impact which would influence the entire world. Well, Vietnam fell. Right now, American corporations, after having shut down 50,000 factories in America over the last dozen years, are now investing $10 billion a year in Vietnam, where the average wage is a dollar an hour. What they told us about Vietnam was wrong. I remember Afghanistan, a country which virtually did not have an army. That was going to be an easy conquest. 11 years later, we are still in Afghanistan in the longest war in the history of the United States of America. And I remember Iraq, a war I voted against. And I remember President Bush standing on that aircraft carrier talking about mission accomplished. And after 4,600 men and women were dead, and as chairman of the Veterans Committee, I can tell you what I think most of you know. We have tens of thousands of good, decent men and women back here in the United States today who are suffering with traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. We're trying to figure out how we deal with those issues. That was Iraq, which was, as I recall, a slam dunk, no problem. Point is that war has unintended consequences. The point is that when you get into a bloody and complicated civil war in Syria, it is going to be, in my view, pretty hard to get out of that war. Now, I know that for progressives in Wisconsin and Vermont and all over this country, these are difficult times. These are painful times. I think a lot of people are disappointed with the actions coming from the White House, whether it's this effort toward a war in Syria, whether it's the NSA and the other invasions of privacy, whether it is not standing up to right-wing Republican extremism. And I think that disappointment stretches all across this country. But I just want to say a couple of things about that. Martin Luther King Jr., whose great speech we marked the 50th anniversary of just the other day, reminded us of something very, very profound, and that is the arc of history is very long, but it tends toward justice. In other words, there are ups and there are downs. And as we sit here this afternoon, all of us can think, those of us who are older or those of us who have read history, know that 30, 40, 50 years ago in this United States of America, our African American brothers and sisters could not sit at lunch counters. Schools were segregated. Black Americans did not have the right to vote. I think it is fair to say that 20 or 30 years ago, nobody would have dreamed that this country would have gone as far as it has in not only electing our first African-American president, but re-electing him. So whatever you may be concerned about in terms of the White House, don't underestimate that enormous transformation in the United States in terms of race. Do we have a lot more to do with regard to race? Believe me, we do. We have made progress. In terms of women's rights, think back. Think back about where we were 40 or 50 years ago. Think about women who struggled for the right to vote, for legislation that protected their property rights, divorce law, abortion law, et cetera, et cetera. All of us are aware that around the country right now and in Wisconsin, there are attacks against women's rights. I am more than aware of that. But do not underestimate the fact that within a short period of time, I expect that half of the legislators in the Congress will be women, and that will be true all over this country. We have made progress in gender equality. And in the issue of gay rights, the progress has almost been breathless. Nobody would have believed 20 years ago that right-wing Republicans would be on the defensive in terms of gay marriage and other gay-related issues. Now, why do I say that? I say that because things change in ways that sometimes you cannot really predict. So while on a number of fronts, in terms of breaking down inequality in America, whether it's racial, gender, whatever, sexual orientation, we have made real progress. Clearly on the economic front, not only have we not made progress, we are losing ground significantly. And what must we do? First of all, what we must do is never give up hope, never throw our hands up in despair and say, this is too hard. I can't do it. I'm tired. We have a moral obligation, to our kids and our grandchildren to maintain the fight that those people have waged in this country decade after decade after decade. We simply do not have the moral right to say, sorry, I'm backing off. Too much depends upon our need to continue the fight. And let me just say something else about that, and this is important. There is a reason why the favorability rating of the Congress is at 15%. And the reason is not complicated. On issue after issue, Congress ignores the needs of the American people. And this is... And I want to talk about that for a moment, because this is not just Bernie Sanders talking. This is what the facts are. In Washington right now, there is some discussion by the president and some Republicans and some other Democrats to cut Social Security through a so-called chain CPI. That's what they're talking about in Washington. Do you know what the American people are saying? Don't cut Social Security. And there is some discussion coming from the big money interest about raising the Social Security retirement age to 70 and Medicare eligibility age to 70. And do you know what Democrats, Republicans, and independents are saying? No way. You can't make life harder for senior citizens who are struggling today. Do not cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. All over the country, that's what the American people are saying. In terms of tax policy, our Republican friends and some Democrats are prepared to support and continue an extremely regressive and unfair tax system. One out of four major corporations does not pay a nickel in taxes right now, and the kind of revenue that we're bringing into the government through taxes is significantly lower than it used to be. And do you know what the American people are saying across the board? They are saying, ask the rich and large corporations to start paying their fair share of taxes. And in terms of this Syria, I will just tell you what is going on in the state of Vermont. Our phones are bopping off the hook. We are getting many, many emails. 95% of the comments that we are getting say, do not go into war in Syria. So I think I am not going to tell you, you know, that everybody in the United States is a progressive, but I will tell you that on major issue after major issue, the American people agree with much of what we stand for. If you give the American people a long list of issues, do you know what issue they care most strongly about? And that is to create millions of jobs in America. That's what they care about. So our job, and it's a tough job, admittedly, but our job is to educate and to organize and to demand, for once, that the President and the United States Congress start listening to the American people, create the millions of jobs we need, rebuild the middle class, protect the social safety net, be aggressive in making sure that every American has health care as a right. That's what we need to do. Now, when you have a handful of billionaires exercising enormous control over our economy, when these guys are prepared to shut down a plant in Wisconsin or Vermont or any other part of America so they can make 5 cents more by going to China, they're prepared to do that. When you have a situation today where the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and these fellows can sit in a room and pour hundreds of millions of dollars into the political process, our job is tough. It is tough. But this is what I believe and what I have always believed, is that at the end of the day, if working people, if the middle class, if young people, if seniors, if people stand up together, we can beat big money. I believe that. But that isn't easy. That requires us to continue the struggle. Now, the last point that I want to make is that these are tough times in our country economically. They are tough times in our country politically. And I think the major struggle that we face is to deal with oligarchy, to take on the big money interests who have so much influence over this nation. But there is something else equally important that we have got to do, and we don't do enough of. One of the real concerns that I have about another war in Syria, in the Middle East, which would take us into, you know, we've been to a war now for 11 years. We have a defense budget which is almost equivalent to the money being spent on the military by every other country on earth. What I worry about is a nation which continues to focus on war and forgets about the needs of ordinary people. And what our job, and this is a tough job, it's a tough job because you got CNN and you got all the TV out there and you got all the right-wing radio and you got all the newspapers out there. What our job is to go into our hearts and to rekindle a vision of what this country can be. And that vision should be a country where we lead the world and become an example, a model for the rest of the world in terms of doing our best to make sure that all of our kids have the best possible education, where college education is not the most expensive in the world, but that we create a situation where any person in this country, young or old, is able to get all the education that they need, regardless of the income of their family. Now, that's not utopian. That is not a utopian vision. It is a vision which says we want to lead the world in the quality of life that our people have. That's what we want to export all over the world. We want to have the best healthcare system in the world, which focuses on keeping us healthy, that treats us when we are sick, that is not by far the most expensive and wasteful in the system. Wouldn't it be great if we could show the rest of the world how you have high-quality healthcare for all people in a cost-effective way? Wouldn't that be an extraordinary export for the United States of America? And instead of tapping the phones or the emails of foreign leaders all over the world, wouldn't it be great if we invited those leaders to Washington to talk together how we're going to be extremely aggressive in cutting greenhouse gas emissions, coming up with the new technologies that we need? Think what that would mean to the spirit of young people. And think what it would mean as we focus on the simple question of how do we live well? How do we love each other? How do we create sustainable communities where people feel good about where they are living, are proud of where they are living? In other words, instead of being the major military power on earth, instead of being a country that exports weapons of death all over the world, let's export something very different, a new quality of life for all of our people. So in the midst of these tough times, it is absolutely imperative. It is a moral responsibility that we keep the faith, that we continue the struggle. I am absolutely confident. I don't know when the day is going to come. It may not come, you know, in my lifetime. It may not come in your lifetime. But I have absolute confidence that the day will come when this country rekindles those virtues, those parts of our past that were the envy of the entire world, that we rally our young people and the energy and the idealism that they have, that we are going to be a compassionate people, that we are going to be in the vanguard of making this world a better place in which to live. So but none of that happens unless we educate, unless we organize, unless we keep fighting. Thank you all very much, Wisconsin, for what you have done. Take care.